Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 5, the meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev, text number 27. Bratar mama sutta kvachin. Okay, we'll do 20. Actually, 27 doesn't have a purport, so just read the translation. My son Baladev, being raised by you and your wife, Jasoda Devi, considers you his father and mother. Is he living very peacefully in your home with his real mother, Rohini? Text 28. Pumsa Sri Vargo Vihita. Surido Yanu Bhavitaha. Eteshu Klishamaneshu. Trivargo, Trivargur, Taya Kalpate, Pumsaha, of a person, Trivarga, the three aims of life, religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Vihitaha, enjoined according to Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Surida, towards relatives and friends. He, indeed, Anubhavita, when they are properly in line. Na, not. Teshu, in them. Klishamaneshu, if they're actually in any difficulty. Sri Varga, these three aims of life. Artaya, for any purpose. Kalpate, does become so. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When one's friends and relatives are properly situated, one's religion, economic development, and sense gratification, as described in the Vedic literatures, are beneficial. Otherwise, if one's friends and relatives are in distress, these three cannot offer any happiness. Prabhupada Vasudev regretfully informed Nanda Maharaj that although he had his wife and children, he could not properly discharge his duty of maintaining them and was therefore unhappy. Text 29. Nanda Maharaj said, "Alas, King Kamsa killed so many of your children, born of Devaki, and your one daughter, the youngest child of all, entered the heavenly planets." Prabhupada, when Vasudev understood that Nanda Maharaj, that the mystery of Krishna's birth and his having been exchanged with Jasoda's daughter was yet undisclosed, he was happy that things were going on nicely. By saying that Vasudeva's daughter was his youngest child, had gone to the heavenly planets, Nanda Maharaj indicated that he did not know that this daughter was born of Jasoda and that Vasudeva had exchanged her with Krishna. Thus the doubts of Vasudeva were dispelled. Every man is certainly controlled by destiny, which determines the results of one's fruitive activities. In other words, one has a son or daughter because of unseen destiny. When the son or daughter is no longer present, this is also due to unseen destiny. Destiny is the ultimate controller of everyone. One who knows this is never bewildered. Prabhupada Nanda Maharaj consoled his younger brother Vasudev by saying that destiny is ultimately responsible for everything. Vasudev should not be unhappy that his many children had been killed by Kamsa, or that the last child, the daughter, had gone to the heavenly planets. Vasudev said to Nanda Maharaj, "Now, my dear brother, since you have paid the annual taxes to Kamsa and have also seen me, do not stay in this place for many days. It is better to return to Gokula, since I know that there may be some disturbances there." Sukadeva Goswami said, after Vasudeva advised Nanda Maharaj in this way, Nanda Maharaj and his associates, the cowherd men, took permission from Vasudeva, yoked their bulls to the bullock carts, and started riding for Gokula. It is mentioned here that one cannot be happy if one can't fulfill the principles properly of Dharma, Kama, Artha, and Kama. Because moksha is not mentioned here. So the point is that in the Vedic civilized society, people are interested in doing their duty. In the modern society, people are interested in other people serving them, and they have no idea what their actual duty is. They're simply interested in exploiting others. So that's the difference between civilization and an uncivilized society. The point is that civilized society is meant to bring us to the platform of understanding what real life is, what the spiritual level of consciousness is, what the spiritual existence is, and therefore, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Ordvamala Dakshakam Ashvatam Praho Arvayam, Jadamsi Yasya Parnani Yastvam Vedas Avedavit. Now there's a banyan tree which has its roots upward and its branches down, and the hymns of the Vedic leaves. Now one who knows this Vedas, one who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. In other words, we're living in the reflection of reality called the material existence. But in this reflection, there is variety. There's relationships. Now the spiritual world is only relationships. And here in the material world, although it appears that there's something other than relationships, but that's all there is here also. Here is an opportunity of properly establishing relationships so that we can gradually make progress towards spiritual consciousness. Or if we don't properly establish relationships, then we make progress towards the lower species of life. So everything is due to, as Queen Kunti says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that dissension amongst living entities is due to their interactions or social intercourse. And our first business is to find out what our duty is. Now people are generally not, in this age, aware of what their duty is. If we introduce the concept of varna and ashram, people are thinking that we're sectarian, that we don't like people, that we want to lord it over them. Especially since Kalo Sudra Sambhava, everyone in this age is born as a Shudra, and therefore everyone is quite sensitive about being exploited. Why are they sensitive about being exploited? Because the so-called Brahmins, the so-called educators, the so-called administrators, and even those who are supposed to be providing the necessities of life, the agriculturalists, they're all Shudras. And therefore they're not fulfilling their duties properly because they had no idea what their duty is. Or as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, Chintyam Aparayam Cha Palayantam Upashitya Kama Paboga Paramam Etavam Iti Nishchita Asha Pashishitarabhada Kama Krota Parayana Yahanti Kama Gopogata Anyenata Sanchaya. They believe, which is a common philosophy nowadays, that to gratify the senses until the end of life is a prime necessity of human civilization. And therefore there is no measurement for their anxiety. Being bound by hundreds and thousands of desires, by lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. In other words, people think relationships is simply for sense gratification. I have a relationship with you because you can fulfill my lust. And there are people who are impeding our lust, and therefore we become angry and try to destroy them or eliminate them. So this is simply some level of animal life. But in the Vedic culture, where there is duty, and that one is trying to fulfill the obligations, and mentions here specifically dharma to begin with, that everyone should know what their dharma is, what their duties to others are, including the cows and the animals and every living entity, then there's no lust. And if there's no lust, there won't be any greed. And if there's no greed, there won't be any frustration. Therefore, if we're angry and frustrated, is a sign that we're not Krishna conscious, that's all. We're living in our materialistic consciousness and conception of who we are and who everyone else is and what everyone else's obligations to me are. That instead of actually trying to fulfill our duty, we're more concerned with what everyone else's duty is, and we're angry at them for not fulfilling their what we think is their duty to satisfy me. So that makes for a very unpleasant society to live in, where everyone is trying to get everyone else to serve their senses and are frustrated, angry, because no one can serve their senses to the degree that they imagine that they're obligated to serve them. But in the Vedic culture, one is simply concerned with what one's own duties are. And if one fulfills those duties properly, then one comes to the higher consciousness. There is no question of higher consciousness without, first of all, knowing what our duty is. Now in this age, because we don't have varna and ashram, or not a clear varna and ashram, therefore our duty is spiritual primarily, but that's not possible for conditioned soul to simply have a spiritual duty. That's for liberated souls. Although spiritual duties are mixed in, for instance, we make a vow to chant 16 rounds of japa, the time of initiation, at least within our society, and to try to improve that chanting through the process of pure devotional service, which includes worship and learning how to get along with the other devotees, includes trying to become more serious about the sadhana, improving one's time management, improving one's concentration and enthusiasm in terms of Krishna consciousness, doing service, selfless service to the sake of pleasing Krishna, and ultimately distributing Krishna consciousness to others. That's called pure devotional service. And by pure devotional service, we're supposed to come to a higher consciousness. So as we come to a higher consciousness, then our relationships with others are supposed to improve. In the spiritual world, there's only loving relationships. And therefore, if we're actually approaching spiritual consciousness, then there should be increase of loving relationships with every living entity. Of course, that may not be possible for the conditioned soul, so at least one has to practice within the society of devotees in order to come to a platform of at least appreciating devotees if they're chanting Hare Krishna, cooperating with them to spread Krishna consciousness in the family of devotees and outside the family, if one is more advanced and serious, and ultimately taking instructions from those who are actually absorbed in loving service to Krishna and helping us come to that platform. And that means if one gets married in Krishna consciousness, one is supposed to be still identifying themselves primarily as a devotee, and therefore engaging primarily in the activities of pure devotional service with one's family. And because we can't do that all the time, because we have materialistic conceptions of life, still one has to see the wife in relationship to one's duty. What is the proper duty of a householder? And if one performs that duty, then the relationship becomes more ultimately closer to loving, which is what everyone's looking for, because love is the only platform of happiness. There's no happiness unless there's actually real love based upon duty. It's just an imagination of happiness due to temporarily gratifying the senses. So even in household life, Prabhupada advises that one sit down morning and evening with the family and chant Hare Krishna together, read Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, worship the deity, and that way try to make this the household life as close to reality as possible. But in the interaction, still, there is, for instance, having children, but the children should be have as a matter of duty, primarily, but that doesn't mean there's no love and affection, there's no feeling, but duty towards Krishna. That is to raise the children in Krishna consciousness. And if one is, base the family upon at least duty, for instance, Shukadeva Goswami, when he left the womb of his mother at 16 years old, then he went wandering immediately. And he passed by one lake where the ladies were bathing naked. Because in India, there are special places previously where the ladies used to bathe. No man was allowed there. And therefore, they could freely bathe without any clothing. So Shukadeva Goswami passed by, but the ladies didn't bother covering themselves because they knew he was innocent. Although he was 16 years old and fully developed male, he still was the transcendentalist who didn't see any real difference between men and women because he saw the soul within everyone's heart and he saw everything else as just an external dress. But when Vyasadeva, his father, who was chasing after him, came by, then immediately the ladies covered themselves. So Vyasadeva, who was also a self-realized soul, asked the ladies, "But dear ladies, my son came by here, and you didn't cover yourselves because he was a self-realized soul, but I'm also a self-realized soul. But why are you covering yourselves when I come by?" So they said, "My dear Vyasadeva," he said, "actually, you may be a self-realized soul, but you're a householder. And householders have to see the difference between men and women. Otherwise, how can they be householders?" Therefore, just as a matter of etiquette or a matter of duty, the ladies cover themselves to respect the fact that Vyasadeva had a certain duty to perform as a householder. And they didn't want to interfere with the proper performance of duty, proper conception of what a householder is. That if one plays a part, even when it's a self-realized soul, then one has to play the part properly. Of course, if one is a self-realized soul, like Vyasadeva, then one can perfectly play the part, or whatever part he's playing, and can adjust everything appropriately. But if we're not self-realized souls, we still have to play our part properly, although it's more difficult for us, because we don't know how to perform our part so expertly. But by practice, one gets better. We get better because if we play it improperly, then our relationships with others become less satisfying and we become unhappy. Because as I said, everything was based upon actual higher consciousness going towards actual love. The higher the consciousness, the better, the sweeter the relationships are. And if we think higher consciousness means I merge in Brahman, I become God, we've missed the whole point. Ultimately, higher consciousness brings us towards liberation, but that liberation is not impersonal liberation. It brings us to liberation from our lower dealings with others, a less affectionate, less loving, less appreciative relationships with others. And then one may merge in Brahman temporarily because whatever, one has not really understood the philosophy very well. But the point is that the higher the consciousness, the better relationships. And if we're not self-realized, then we have to practice. And we have to see, as Prabhupada once said in one lecture, if we're feeling morose, it's a sign of lack of Krishna consciousness. Maya will justify our moroseness, tell us we're actually completely 100% right in feeling depressed and morose and angry. We may feel completely justified in our materialistic consciousness. That's Maya's business, to keep us in that conception that we're 100% perfect. And that if there's any fault, it's not in me, it's in everyone else. Now, others may have faults, but if I'm actually becoming influenced by those, what I perceive as faults, then that's my fault. On the other hand, we find someone like Priyavrata Maharaj. Priyavrata Maharaj was the son of Swayambhuva Manu. His brother was Uttamapada. So Swayambhuva Manu was the ruler of the universe at that time. The Manus were ruling the whole universe, practically speaking. They were the administrators on behalf of Lord Brahma. So Swayambhuva Manu had lived for hundreds of millions of years by that time, and he wanted to retire so he can focus on Krishna consciousness. So he was retired, but he had needed a replacement. And the best replacement was Priyavrata. But Priyavrata Maharaj at that time was on the Gana Mandana hill with Narada Muni receiving instructions how he can renounce everything. Because he was a very advanced transcendentalist, Priyavrata Maharaj. But at that time, Swayambhuva Manu realized if I simply went there and asked Priyavrata Maharaj to renounce his renunciation, take over the universe, he's not going to appreciate that very much. He was beyond that. So he came, Swayambhuva Manu came with some reinforcements. He came with Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Indra, a few other Mahajans. Narada Muni is also Mahajan, but he was outnumbered, like 5 Mahajans to 1. So Narada Muni couldn't really contest what 5 other Mahajans were requesting. And so Priyavrata Maharaj was obliged to take over the universe. We can understand he already had a higher taste in Krishna consciousness, and therefore he was not interested. Now I'm going to get the whole universe and I can enjoy. He just did it as a matter of duty because his authorities told him to do so. But if you take over the universe at that time, you have to perform sacrifice. And to perform sacrifice, you need a wife, because sacrifice has to be complete. So he got married. So now marriage means that you have to get children, you have to get involved in so many different materialistic activities, which Priyavrata Maharaj did. And his wife had to play the part also of the proper wife. Not that my husband's a self-realized soul and I dress in rags, so I don't... No, she dressed very nicely. She acted very in a feminine way to attract Priyavrata Maharaj, at least seemingly attract him. And Priyavrata Maharaj played the part of a householder appropriately. He accepted the service of his wife, even her feminine gestures, but within himself he always remained a self-realized soul. Now, we can't do that very easily unless you're a self-realized soul. You can't be detached from the illusory energy so easily. Therefore, you can't play the part of a householder so perfectly. Because if you play the part of a householder, you make a mistake, you become attracted, and then your consciousness goes down. Attracted materially. But he showed the example of how to be a self-realized soul at the same time, play the part of a householder properly. So playing the part of a householder means more than just trying to act as a sannyasi or a sannyasini in household life. It means acting properly as a householder, controlling the mind and senses, but appreciating the service that the wife or husband are doing in their positions dutifully. So that takes practice, and if one is not self-realized, one should still find out what one's duty is and try to do that as best as possible from a self-realized point of view. That is basically remembering Krishna and seeing when things, everyone and everything relates to Krishna and Krishna's service. Because we're not trained up by how to act as a perfect householder by having perfect household parents. In the Vedic society, people had perfect household parents who came from generations of perfect parents who knew perfectly well how to treat everyone in the family appropriately so that they advanced in consciousness. And at the same time, they were satisfied in their household life. Since we don't have that, to more or less extent, one has to try to understand the best as possible what the duties of a householder are, like namely charity, sense of mind control, and sacrifice in general, and try to perform them in household life. Sacrifice, which means in this age, participate in the Sankirtan movement, same time give some proportion of one's earnings in charity to the Sankirtan movement and to the Brahmins and the Sannyasis and other elevated persons. And at the same time, control the senses. Don't try to exploit the children or the husband or the wife to accumulate materials for sense gratification or engage in sense gratification. So only that's possible if one is cultivating Krishna consciousness and understanding the value of developing higher relationships with the people we're dealing with, more loving relationships, which starts with duty. As long as we're trying to exploit each other, lust will arise, then greed will arise, then anger will arise, and illusion will arise. And there's no question of higher loving relationships. It just gets more and more cloudy. Even some decades ago, when people were actually, at least, they believed in some kind of religion, and they followed some kind of religious principles, therefore at least people could stay married to each other for decades and decades. And my grandparents stayed married I was there at their 50th wedding anniversary. My parents had their 50th wedding anniversary. And they went on until they left their bodies, married. Because although they were not necessarily overwhelmingly Krishna conscious, but they had some religious principles that they followed, and they followed their parents, their religious principles, to a greater or lesser extent. And nowadays, there are no religious principles. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in religious principles. They don't believe in anything but gratifying their senses, and therefore they can't even stay married for a year or so. It's too much. They can't tolerate not having their senses gratified and expecting that the other person demands too much of they're not getting, they think, an even deal in the sense they're not getting gains in their business deal of sense gratification. Therefore, they look for someone else to exploit. And therefore, the whole society is simply falling apart. They're less than the animals. At least the animals, they usually raise their children together, and they don't eat each other. At least the same kind of animal usually doesn't eat each other. But nowadays, people are less than animals because they've lost all their religious principles, or they're losing them. So the purpose is, this idea of the householder is supposed to have sacrifice, charity, and sense of mind control. This is this is only way of leading to reality. Not that I become a devotee and I'm chanting Hare Krishna. And I don't have to give charity. I don't have to have sense of mind control. I don't have to give I don't have to perform sacrifice to the Sankirtan movement or any other kind of sacrifice. I'm a devotee. It's complete illusion. We're aspiring to become devotees, and if we were actually devotees, then we perfectly perform these duties, as Krishna says. And if we're just imaginary devotees, then we'll just live in our imaginations, and we won't even know that this is our duties, and that we have to, that Krishna demands that we perform these duties if we want to become elevated in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we'll become degraded, even while we're so-called chanting Hare Krishna. Of because we were sincere about chanting, Krishna will eventually give us some intelligence, so we'll actually understand that we have duties to perform other than just chanting Hare Krishna. And if we're not so intelligent, then we may have to go through some very difficult times, even as so-called devotees. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
How to introduce this culture in even in ISKCON, because devotees come from a background where there's no culture, like, for example, like dealings between men and women. How to introduce this in ISKCON?
Well, you have the women on this side, and you have the men on this side. That's a starter. And at least we've gone that so far. We have the men collected in some way and the women collected. They're not sitting in class holding hands with each other. So we've made it that far so far. As far as the more technical things, therefore, as expected, if we introduce culture, then it's maybe gradually. Therefore, we give class some direction. Emphasize something that's important. Now, we could just talk about all the pastimes of Krishna in the bushes with the gopis. And I would think, well, this is a very nice class. It's not ruffling my false ego at all, not demanding anything from me. I'm just enjoying and relishing it. I can just go on with my life as it is, not feel guilty about doing anything. Anything goes wrong, I'll just blame it on everyone else. If I'm not feeling good, it's not my fault. It's everyone else's fault. But we introduce some philosophy and some, hopefully someone may appreciate it and actually take it seriously and apply it in their lives. And therefore the relationships that they have at least will change. Anything else? Jai. Grandharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.